Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
As this past hurricane season made clear, the forces of this planet, when they turn out in full force, are almost beyond comprehension. This last week, the Earth displayed its inner core when it turned on a faucet of molten rock that roiled the ocean, tore a chunk of solid land from its moorings in a colossal show of force, then quickly built the land back out into the sea. We're off to Hawaii and a unique national park that pays tribute to the great wonders of volcanoes when we return here on the Wildside News. America's public lands embrace such an amazing diversity of landscapes, from historic sites and trails to tall grass prairies and the grand spectacles. And it also celebrates some spectacular natural phenomenon. There are few that can compare with the spectacle of Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, which this last week provided a spectacular moment for all the world to see. Well, all over the planet, miraculous things happen, amazing things happen, and one of the most spectacular events on the planet are volcanoes, volcanic eruptions. And we're very lucky today to be talking with a man who's talking to us from Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, Kupono McDaniel. Welcome to the Wildside News.
Thank you.
Well, listen, let's first of all talk about your park. It's a national park dedicated to volcanoes. That's a little bit different.
Yeah, very unusual. I'm sitting on an erupting volcano right now.
Well, you better get off of that thing. Tell me what people see when they come to your park.
Well, it's interesting. When people come into the park, they drive through an entrance station. They're in a rainforest. They're surrounded by native forest and trees. And often the first question in the visitor center is, where's the volcano? It's interesting. You have to kind of go across the street and through the forest, and then all of a sudden you're on a rim of a 3-mile-across, 400-foot-deep hole in the ground, the Kilauea Caldera. It's interesting. As you get over there, you start to see the steam. You can often smell the gases. But the eruption's been coming out the side of the volcano for the last 22 years. So when people want to see the volcano, a lot of times people come in for a short trip, a couple of hours, and they may be coming from Kona wearing bikinis and shorts, and it's quite cold up here at 4,000 feet elevation.
Oh, wow. You're way up there.
Yeah.
Wow.
And a 2-hour trip doesn't really cut it. You can sort of see the summit in a couple of hours, but it's about 175,000 acres an hour if you only have a couple hours here.
Gotcha. So, well, now, recently the park has been on the news because, although you're at 4,000 feet, apparently something is happening more at ocean level that has been quite spectacular.
Yeah, it has been an incredible collapse of the bench. And to explain the bench, essentially the eruption that's coming out of the East Rift Zone, out of the side of the volcano right now, flows about 6 miles down and has been pouring into the ocean numerous times over the last 22 years, building up hundreds of acres of new land, covering 10 miles of roadways, hundreds of people's homes, and thousands of acres of rare forest. As the lava flows in the ocean, if it's flowing into shallow bays and things, it can fill it up and be stable. But that happened early on in the eruption. Lately, the lava's been building up a new delta over unstable land. And as the lava meets the ocean, it shatters, fine particles are deposited, coated over by solid rock, and it appears quite stable. But we knew that this was unstable and going to collapse. Fortunately, the park had closed that area, and we were aware of the hazards out there, and there were no fatalities, no injuries at all as a result of this 44 acres that dropped into the ocean one day.
Wow, that's a big piece of ground.
Yeah, it's huge. It's interesting, too, because it had built up 35 new acres of land, what we call the bench, that unstable section. And when it collapsed, it took with it 9 acres of 500-year-old ground. The eruption that's occurring right now is coming out at about 2,900 feet elevation out of the side of the volcano, which is about 4,000 feet tall. As the lava flows downhill, naturally, it forms a crust over the top, which insulates the heat inside of the lava and allows it to travel for long distances. So after a six-mile flow, it pours into the ocean, starts building up new land, and if it's flowing over shallow shelves and coral reefs and things, it can be quite stable. But now that we're 22 years into this eruption, it has filled in all the shallow areas and it's flowing into deep ocean, builds up these unstable benches that slide into the ocean basically at Pele's whim. So we had closed the area, fortunately. It was really, really unusual over the last 8.5 years I've been here. We've only closed the flow field one time. And so it's fortunate that we had it closed.
Now, what gave you this insight that you thought you might close it at this time?
Well, fortunately for us, the United States Geological Survey, Hawaii Volcanoes Observatory, is right here in the park. And so they help us monitor and make safety decisions. We had closed the whole coastal flat because lots of sulfur dioxide was coming out. And one of the main tube had collapsed and had hanging edges. And so we generally allow very close access to lava, and we, as long as it's safe, we'll let people stand within 5 or 6 feet of 2,000-degree moving rock. But when it's not safe, as long as people are following the guidelines, we can still see great views from a distance. So that's what people were viewing on last week, Monday, was a distant view of lava pouring in the ocean. The new bench had built out 35 brand new acres of land, but it had accreted to the old land. So this flow, the overland flow that's basically solid rock, had linked right to the 500-year-old sea cliff. So when the 35 acres began sloughing in, it actually tore off 9 acres of old land. Wow. And all of that is gone now. All of our signs, all of our rope lines, everything dropped into the ocean is gone.
So then what resulted was absolutely dramatic.
Yes. Probably many of your listeners had seen that image of a fire hose of lava shooting out into the sea. And it was just remarkable to see this exposed tube. It's basically, if you think of... Well, it's almost like having a garden hose underground and removing the ground and cutting the hose. It's literally shooting out into the sea, piling up this frozen lava. It would break off, and it has a brand new delta that's starting to form already.
Mm.
On the United States Geological Survey website, they have some great images.
Mm-hmm. So when was the last time that this had actually happened?
Well, we've had bench collapses numerous times. In fact, we had had a small bench collapse 2 weeks prior. I call it small, although it was still quite large. 12 acres had dropped into the ocean 2 weeks prior.
With the subsequent direct lava going into the ocean?
Yeah. Well, we didn't have. It wasn't so dramatic. What had happened when the end of the bench actually forms as the lava kind of goes down about a 40-foot cliff and it builds out the new land lower down. So when the tip of that lower land falls off, it's actually exposing it right to the edge of the ocean.
Right.
So you don't get as dramatic a drop. This fire hose that was shooting out there, probably at least four feet thick, shooting out into the sea, was a pretty uncommon event. The last time I had seen that was even before I was a ranger in 1995. I was at school at the University of Hawaii. We drove down there, and we sat all night long watching that thing shooting into the sea.
That must be extremely dramatic at night.
It is, and it just reminds us how powerless we are against nature to see this change, you know, instantly from 35 acres to nothing, and then to start seeing land build up again within the course of 24 hours.
So now what's the status of that part of your park?
That area in the park is still closed because of the lava tube that's still collapsing out there and the instability. But viewers down there have been able to drive from the park entrance station up here on the summit, 45 minutes down Chain of Craters Road and park, and walk in 20 minutes. We've got a nice viewpoint set up. Rangers are often there with a telescope looking across the bay at the birth of land.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still seeing some great activity. We just are not seeing that fire hose shooting into the ocean right now.
Just for my information and our listeners, this is probably happening all around the world in various forms.
Well, not so much with regard to basaltic eruptions. Mm-hmm. I think this is the only one that's happening on the planet right now.
Is that right?
Certainly the only one that's flowing into the ocean right now, and spreading out the landscape. Certainly Mount St. Helens is building up right now as well.
Mm-hmm.
Watching that dome grow is just as spectacular as watching lava flow. It may take a little more imagination. Here you can see that orange 2,000-degree rock moving.
Well, fascinating. Well, let's talk a little bit generally about your park, what people see besides the lava flows and what they can do, and also if there's a kind of a season.
Yeah, thank you, because personally I'm a biologist, and the unique ecology here at Hawaii Volcanoes National Park is really dramatic. Hawaii, being so far from any other landmass on the planet, has very unique species. They had to travel 2,000 miles over the salty seas to arrive here on their own, and it's given rise to one of the most unique ecosystems on the planet. Over 90% of our native species are endemic, not found anywhere else on the planet besides Hawaii. So when you drive in and see all this forest on top of this erupting volcano, it's unusual, it's rare, special forest, and we're trying to preserve it on top of an erupting volcano. So it presents us with a little dichotomy. And also being Hawaiian, this place has great meaning to me culturally. My ancestors are embodied in the plants and animals here, even the rocks, Pele, one of our deities that's still celebrated regularly. Is very active and very apparent here.
How about camping, that type of kind of traditional forms?
Yeah, it's actually very, very much like other national parks in the United States. We actually were established in 1916, and we have many backcountry camping opportunities, hike-in camping, probably about 200 miles of trails. We have two drive-up campgrounds even for families who want to just come in and spend a night in a campsite and go down and see some lava without having to drive all the way back to Kona, which is something a lot of people don't really understand. They think they're on a little island, and they've got a 2.5 to 3 hour drive home at the end of the evening if they're staying in Kona.
Now, this gives me a vision as we're sort of approaching the holiday season and the rest of the United States is kind of moving into winter zone. What a concept to just pick up and go camping at your park. What a great concept.
Yeah, that sounds kind of nice to me, and it's interesting over here. Some of our rangers are planning to go back home for the holidays, and they're getting reports that it's 6 degrees, and so everyone's getting ready to get bundled up to go home for the holidays, but I am home, and it's about 70 degrees today.
And that's kind of the way it is probably most of the year, isn't it?
Most of the year, yeah. The winter does get cooler, and often in November it's quite rainy, but we've had just a sunny, beautiful November. Only about 5% of our normal rainfall for the month so far.
Now, here's something I'd be curious about from a biological perspective, and that is because you're an island, you know, typically if any creature is there, it had to figure out, as you say, a way to get there. So let's talk about the unique character of that as it relates to mammals and birds.
Yeah, really. It's very unique. I mean, if you think about it, there aren't really any four-legged land mammals that can travel 2,000 miles over the ocean. In fact, almost nothing is equipped to travel 2,000 miles over the ocean. It was just a miracle that things were arriving here. Even perhaps one species every 50,000 years was able to establish on this chunk of rock in the middle of the ocean. And it's interesting, my wife is a botanist in the park, and she's been learning all sorts of interesting things about the arrival of plants, since one of our most important species. It sounds like a long time, but they say it's only been here for about 300,000 years, which is interesting because it's the dominant species now in our forest.
Mm.
So they're really getting curious about what was here before the Ohia came in and began changing the landscape.
And any ideas?
Well, no. It's something that she's looking into. Of course, we're more interested in the future of the forest, but but it's a very curious thing to think that the dominant species in our rainforest has been here for such a short time, and the bird that uses it as one of the birds that uses it as its main food source has been said to have been here for a few million years.
Well, that's very interesting. What was it doing prior to that?
Exactly. So these are just some of the mysteries that remain to be answered out here, and for Westerners, having only been here 200 years, that is what we have as far as history. Mm. It's not history unless it's been written down. Mm. Hawaiians have lots of incredible oral histories that tell stories even of the phreatomagmatic explosions that we have here.
And now, say that again. The what kind of explosions?
Phreatomagmatic.
Oh, okay.
It's a fun word that means water hits the magma.
Gotcha. Water hits the magma. That should be a bumper sticker or something. Name of a band. Water hits the magma.
That sounds good, yeah.
It does. Yeah. Well, also, are those cultural dynamics as well interpreted in the park?
Oh, yeah. We have the largest concentration of petroglyphs in the United States here, Pu'uloa, which is the Hill of Long Life. Hawaiians would come from every island on the chain to bring a segment of their child's umbilical cord here to ensure the longevity of their kids.
Hmm.
So for the parents who liked their kids, that was a very important journey they were making.
Now, a petroglyph is a rock, a pectot rock, isn't that?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you have, how do those compare? I'm curious with, for example, some of the southwestern Indian cultures. If I'm familiar with the southwestern Indians, and I'm always fascinated the way in which cultures around the world seem to have kind of a similar perspective. So any correlations?
Yeah, very much so, and I've really been amazed at looking at these images here and having seen pictures of the ones in the southwest, and as a child, seeing the ones in the northwest up at Nia Bay, Native American images on the coast, Washington coast, and so many of the human images just look the same.
Mm.
There's so many similarities, it's remarkable. We're surprised that we don't see any whale images like so many of the Native American images here, but whales were not as important to the Native Hawaiians.
You've been at the park for what, about 10 years?
Close to it. I'm going on 9 years here.
It's one of the best lives in the world, although we'll keep that secret, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because you get to live in this paradise, what aspect in your park is your favorite?
Well, it's interesting, you know, to be working on an erupting volcano. It is the main focus of nearly all of our visitors. But for me, taking a half an hour walk through Kipuka Pu'aulu, which is the most diverse forest in the state, is really among my top things to do in the park. You walk through there, you can feel the ancestors, you often get information that you wouldn't get any other way than spending time with nature.
Share with our world, because this is personal to you, and I certainly understand that totally. When you say you can feel your ancestors, sort of an idea that many Westerners aren't going to quite grasp, so give us an insight.
Yeah, it's interesting, and very much I've found like indigenous cultures around the world, whether they're from Europe or anywhere else on the planet, the idea of celebrating nature as our provider is a fairly common theme. But for Hawaiians, we even see various specific deities and ancestors in the plants and in the animals here. Pele, the goddess of the volcano, embodied in the flowing lava, even the steam and the gases here. So when we're in the forest, a lot of times when you're presented with a quandary or a conundrum, you might just take a walk in the forest and stop and stand quietly and ask for the assistance of your ancestors, and they'll come to you and give you the right information. Sometimes you're not even expecting it, and that's the neat thing for me about walking through the forests here. I don't think it's specific to the Hawaiian nationality either. I've had many people inspired by walking through our forest.
You're absolutely right. Sometimes it sounds exotic, particularly when you apply the Polynesian sounds to what you just said. But in reality, this is something that just regular people experience. It's just, it kind of comes through in different ways. I certainly am one who goes to nature to find answers.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would just call it inspiration, spending time in the forest. And it is inspiring to see so many unique things around you and just the natural quiet of the wind blowing through the leaves.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank you. We've been talking with Kūpono McDaniel, who has been speaking with us from Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. Thank you so much for bringing your voice to the Wildside News.
Yeah, thank you, Sydney. Aloha.
From the core of the earth to the lofty pursuits of humankind, your voice of the earth returns each week with new insights and inspirations, compliments of the wonder. This is Sydney Wildsmith saying aloha. Until next time, when your voice of the earth returns, or any time on the archives, here on the Wild Side News.